It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite tea-bagging redneck, Mark Gillar.
Good Saturday morning to you. This is Mark Gillar with the Tea Party Power Hour. Today we begin a new segment on the show where we interview Tea Party leaders from around the country. We are very fortunate today to have Tea Party leaders from three Tea Parties that have distinguished themselves as being among the most active and the most successful in terms of affecting change of any Tea Parties in the country. We will be visiting with Karen Martin of the Spartanburg, South Carolina Tea Party, Toby Walker of the Waco, Texas Tea Party, and Bill Hennessy of the St. Louis, Missouri Tea Party. My first guest today is Karen Martin. She is an organizer with the Spartanburg, South Carolina Tea Party. She's here to talk to us about some of her group's past activities as well as some of the things they've got coming up in the future. And I'd really like to get her opinion on what Jimmy Hoffa Jr. had to say about the Tea Party yesterday. Karen, welcome to the show.
I'm so thankful that you sought out the Spartanburg Tea Party and gave me a call. We really love to talk about what we're doing down here in South Carolina.
Well, I've been monitoring your emails and looking at your website, and you seem to be one of the more active tea parties in the country, a whole lot of activity going on, and you guys aren't just waving signs around. You are affecting change at the local and state level.
We really are. In fact, the Spartanburg Tea Party has never held a rally. Our thoughts when we organized is we want to put some boots on the ground and start working on what's going to change our country, which is going to be getting conservatives in office. And we really focus on our local and state level.
How big a group are you?
Our email list is 450. We do have monthly meetings, and at those monthly meetings, we have between 40 and 50 people. So I think kind of a small group, pretty committed.
Well, I was going to say, for a small group, you have accomplished a lot. Now, how long ago did you form?
One year ago in January we formed. We formed about a year after the first Tea Parties came out because there were several Tea Parties in our upstate area of South Carolina, but I didn't see, was really putting out the information and impacting change and getting people involved. And we really started out just as an information distributor. And after a few months of that, some of our people saying, well, why don't you have meetings? And then we started to have meetings, and it grew from there.
Well, let me compliment you on your information distribution. Taking a look at your website, which our listeners can go to at SpartanburgTeaParty.org, this should be a template for tea parties around the country in terms of how to organize your website and how to get critical information out to your members and out to the community. Very, very, very well done, Karen.
Thank you so much. It's so good to hear that.
Well, it's true. I mean, a lot of the sites, you go to them and what you see are pictures of their last rally. And it's obvious to me that, and I really didn't know when we started the interview that your group hadn't done a rally, but it was obvious to me from looking at the website that this was a group that was about making a difference and doing the types of things that you have to do to make a difference. Now, one of the things that we were talking about offline yesterday was the success that your Tea Party had in getting your local county not to comply with ICLEI. Tell everyone, because this was new to me, what ICLEI is all about and why your Tea Party felt the need to get involved and how you were able to affect this change.
Sure. I will say that it was not only our Tea Party, but it was several other conservative groups in our county, along with a couple of our county councilmen who really took this issue. ICLEI is an organization. It's the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. And it's actually an arm of Agenda 21, if your listeners are familiar with that. And Agenda 21 comes straight for the UN. And the bottom line is property rights. And there are many municipalities and counties around our nation that have signed on to this ICLEI initiative, really many of them before they understood what they're going on, getting into in good faith. But once you read its own website, you see how dangerous it is to be involved with that and having the UN just have any kind of finger at all in personal property rights. So a couple of our newly elected county councilmen chatted with some of our Tea Party folks and taxpayer associations, learned what ICLEI is, brought it up at one county council meeting, And you didn't really have to know very much about them other than reading from their website. The county councilmen were very concerned, and they saw that Ickley was really infringing on private property rights, and they voted to take Spartanburg County's victory because we're only the eighth or ninth municipalities that have actually gotten our name off roster. So great kudos to our conservative county council folks.
Tell us a little bit more about that encroachment on property rights. I mean, what exactly is Ickley all about, and how would they, you know, invade the property rights of the average citizen?
It sounds so innocent. They try to stress things like bike lanes and buying up farmland to put into these conservatories, and they talk a lot about Ickley really focuses on things like buying up farmlands and putting into conservatories, and they're really into promoting a lot of public transportation. And the unseen goal of that is to bring the rural areas of a community into a more centralized area, moving people from the suburbs into the cities. I mean, it's just a crazy thing. But once you start looking at their agenda, you realize that what they want to do is have less privately held property, more government held property, and that's just not a good thing.
Well, you mentioned that there are only nine communities in America that have been able to disassociate themselves from Ickley. How many would you say are associated with them and need to be, possibly looked at for severance of this relationship?
You know, I'm not an Agenda 21 expert, but I will tell you I'm sure it is hundreds. The national expert on the Agenda 21 issues is a guy named Tom DeWeese, and on his website there's lots of great information, and he keeps a roster of who's in and who's out of Ickley. And the thing is, they have just these well-meaning names, like our local group that is really related to Ickley. They're called Upstate Forever, and it sounds really wonderful.
It does.
He's reading the mission statement. And really, when our county council looked at this, there wasn't like subject matter experts arguing back and forth that night. Our county councilmen just brought up the website and just started reading their mission statement. And just from that, the other councilmen, I mean, you can see their faces go pale, and they had no idea that that's what they were involved with.
Wow. It's interesting how insidious some of these things can be. I mean, I think some of the green movement is pretty much the same way. I mean, who's not for clean air and clean water and more trees? And it all sounds so good, but then you start taking a closer look at it and you find that the whole thing involves eliminating individual citizen rights and having your life micromanaged by the government, telling you what kind of light bulbs to use, what kind of car to drive. A lot of these things sound good, but then when you dig into them, it's basically robbing Americans of their freedoms. Has this issue gotten much attention at the national level?
I have not seen it get a lot of attention at the national level, but I have seen many Tea Parties and many grassroots groups learning about this issue, educating their communities. There are several pockets of people in South Carolina that are really just focusing on learning about this, bringing it to their community, educating their county council. And once this is on your radar screen, if you follow social media, if you're following social media, you can see where people are posting about the impact of Ickley and Agenda 21 in their communities and how they're learning about it and what they're doing to fight it.
If someone out there listening right now would like to get their Tea Party involved and would like to check into whether or not their community either has done something like this or is considering it, as a person experienced in leading your community in a fight against this, give them some advice on where to start, where to learn, where to get information that they can bring back to their Tea Parties and educate their Tea Parties with it.
Right. Well, I would use one of our favorite tools, of course, Google, and I would Google the name Tom DeWeese, and that last name is D as in dog, E-W-E-E-S-E. And he really is the expert, and he's got a lot of information on his website, and that's where I'd start. And you could also go onto YouTube. There are a lot of Agenda 21 for Dummies kind of videos. that's where I would start. Be prepared to take in a lot of information because this has been going on for a lot of years.
Well, before we get into some of your upcoming events, I'd like to get your opinion of the remarks that by now I think everybody out there has heard from Jimmy Hoffa Jr. regarding the fact that his union, the Teamsters, were in fact an army for President Obama, and in reference to the Tea Party, they were going to take the, and I'll clean this up, take the SOBs out. How does it feel to be part of a Tea Party and know that the Teamsters want to take us out?
It's a little surreal to understand that there are Americans who really do wish other Americans who could be their neighbors, people that they go to church with in athletic fields, on baseball and soccer leagues, that they really wish to do other Americans harm. And yet, having watched the past 3 years and educated ourselves on what's been happening, even the last 3 years, it's sad to say that it's no longer shocking to hear language like that. And it's really no longer shocking to have the President of the United States standing there listening to someone saying that and then afterwards saying how proud they are of him. And I just think that it makes us really sober and understanding that the fight that we're in is just so important. And we can't lose sight of the fact that every day we need to be pushing forward. Sad to say it's no longer a shock, but as an American, I'm just filled with disgust.
Well, the talking points coming out of the White House can't be too surprising. They're saying that President Obama did not actually hear him say that and then, began accusing any reporter that wanted to talk about it of, engaging in guilt by association. So a lot of the same stuff we heard whenever people made the Bill Ayers-Barack Obama connection. I think the long and short of it is Obama's not going to call Jimmy Hoffa Jr. out on it. The mainstream media, I think just because of how incendiary the language, in fact, was, does seem to be giving it some coverage. But it's kind of interesting to me that Sarah Palin put a crosshair on her map showing which districts were vulnerable, and she was blamed for the shooting of Gabriella Giffords in Arizona. I wonder if anyone in the mainstream media is going to be blaming Jimmy Hoffa Jr. the next time there's any type of shooting because of what he said yesterday.
Well, I really don't think you're wondering that hard about that. And what I say to people in our in our Tea Party that talk about these things and ask about them is we just cannot pay that much attention to that. We just have to put our heads down and work, because the only way we're going to overcome that kind of rhetoric and really put it to bed and, in the meantime, overcome the media's collusion with it is to put our house in order, elect enough conservatives at local and state and federal levels to make a difference that way. We're not going to be able to silence that ridiculous talk, and we can't pay too much attention to it. We have to keep working.
If someone out there listening is in the Spartanburg area and would like to join your group, how can they connect with you?
Really easy. Just go to our website, SpartanburgTeaParty.org, and in the upper left-hand corner, you can click and join our email list. And I update, as you notice, our content several times a day, 3, 4, mm-hmm. 5 times a day. I'm putting up new articles. And then the next morning, I grab all the headlines of those articles, stick them in an email, and email them out. And I try to do a balance of informational articles versus action items. And what I'm hoping is if I get that information out, people will take it upon themselves to either individually or as a group take action on them.
What events does your group have coming up in the near future, Karen?
We had a busy summer, really. I mean, some of the things that we focused on over the summer is getting people to run for school board elections, asking people to go to poll worker training, anything to get involved. We've actively recruited candidates for some of our state house races. We recently held a whole day of candidate and campaign training for people who are just barely dipping their toes in and thinking that they might either want to run for an office or help on a campaign. We've been teaching Constitution classes once a month since the beginning of the year. and we're involved in planning a Constitution Day festival, which is going to happen on Constitution Day, which is September 17th. So we've been pretty busy.
It certainly sounds like it. One of the things that I guess we'll go ahead and announce today is that the Spartanburg Tea Party has been selected as the first Tea Party in America to participate in what we're going to call the Tea Party Book Club. We're going to try to kick that off the first part of October, where we're going to bring members of the Spartanburg Tea Party in, or actually have them on the phone as we talk with some of America's more prominent conservative authors. So we're proud to have the Spartanburg Tea Party as our very first Tea Party Book Club participant.
Yeah, and I'm really honored by that. I think that is just a great and innovative way to get people talking about ideas, things that they've read, things that they want other people's opinions about.
What I love about your Tea Party is, and there's nothing wrong with getting out there and gaining visibility and waving the signs, but you guys came to the conclusion early that there's more to causing change to come about in your community than just waving signs. And this is probably one of the best examples I've seen of a Tea Party that is doing the things behind the scenes that need to be done. So I wish you continued success with that. And I look forward to meeting more members of the Spartanburg Tea Party in early October when we have you guys on for the first Tea Party Book Club. Thanks for being with us today, Karen.
Thank you so much.
My next guest is Toby Marie Walker of the Waco Tea Party. She is a Sammy Award winner. She is considered to be one of the reasons that the Waco Tea Party is one of the most thriving, creative, and impactful grassroots groups in the country. Her activism has led her to be featured on NPR, the BBC, and the New York Times. Toby, it is an honor to have you here today. Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tell the folks at home what the Sammy Awards are in case they don't know.
The Sammys are kind of like the Grammys for conservative activists. The Sam Adams Alliance out of Chicago puts those on each year, I think for the last 3 or 4 years. And people can win different prizes from different categories all the way up to $25,000 for their activism.
Wow. Well, now I've got something to shoot for next year.
Exactly. They actually have one for a podcast and for radio shows and that kind of thing. So.
Oh, fantastic. Well, maybe we can share the stage next year. Share a few secrets of your success. And by your success, I mean you have unquestionably a very, very active group there in Waco. How do you keep them so motivated? How do you keep them so fired up?
Well, actually, that's the easiest part because all we do is keep telling them what Congress does or what the city council might be thinking of. So the elected officials really are the ones that keep them fired up because they keep doing things that annoy them.
If you had to list your, I think that's pretty much the case all over the country.
Yeah, and that's what fires them up. And then we give them creative ways to vent. And we've said from the beginning that we felt like the tea parties were pressure cookers, and it was our job to let off the steam before they, you know, make a mess in the kitchen.
Ah, well, you know, we talked about creativity the other day when I was setting up this interview. Talk to the folks at home about some of the more creative things the Waco Tea Party has done.
Well, we've done, for events, we've had massive meet and greets during the primaries. And we call, you know, election palooza or primary paloozas. And we invite all the candidates in, and we allow people to, you know, set up a table for their candidate, and they talk about, you know, why they're running and why they should be voted for. And we don't want to fundraise, but they can come out and actually meet the people they're electing. We've held forums and things like that. But on the creative side, we've done some things like when we were rallying against healthcare, we teamed up with AFP here in Texas and did honk against healthcare rallies.
Okay, hang on a second. That's Americans for Prosperity for anyone who didn't catch that. Go ahead.
And what we did, you know, it's either hot or it's raining that year. So then you didn't even have to get out of your car. You could just, you know, paint a sign on your paint a message on your back window or put a sign in the back window, drive around the block and honk during your lunch while you eat a burger from, you know, a fast food place.
And what did that honking achieve? Tell them.
Well, it brought out media, and then some. You know, we'd also, you know, would encourage them to come in and drop off a letter to their elected official, and it brought out media attention, And it also made it fun because people wanted to see what some of the cars said or, you know, what people had on their signs or, you know, just come out and talk to everybody and share, you know, why they didn't like it. So, you know, that was one of the things that we did here. We've also had, we couldn't get our congressman to have a town hall last summer.
That was Chet Edwards.
Chet Edwards, Congressman Edwards. We put out
former Congressman.
Former Congressman Chet Edwards. We put out a BOLO alert for our congressman and put his face on a milk carton and sent it to everybody.
I love it. That's
yeah.
Funny.
So we we've also had picnics. A community picnics where you could come out. We supplied all of the food, and you just brought the, you know, your own beverages and sides, and they would come out and just, you know, listen to different speakers. We have rant contests where they come out and anybody can come up and get 30 seconds to a dollar or 30 seconds to a minute on the mic and tell us why they're fed up or why they're upset or why they're happy about something. And we have had, you know, why you might be a Tea Party or If contest instead of might be a redneck if, and gave away conservative books for the top prize. And so we do those fun kind of things. And sometimes we have more of a comedy night than we really have anything else. But we found that it keeps people, you know, laughing at, not with, sometimes, the elected officials.
Well, some of them need to be laughed at, and all that free material, you might as well take advantage of some of it.
Yeah, we have monthly meetings. I just left one tonight, where we have organizational meetings some months, about 4 a year, and we get their input of, you know, the next 3 or 4 months or 6 months, this is what we're thinking of doing, and how do you think we should do it, or should we do it?
Mm-hmm.
So we've given them a lot of control over the Tea Party. It's theirs, not ours.
I think it's absolutely phenomenal that this group in Waco, just north of where I am right now, has gained so much national attention for the Tea Party activism. Have you at any point felt that the local media is working against you, or do you feel like they're supportive of your efforts there in Waco?
Well, from the very beginning of the Tea Party, like from day one, the media here was not, at the very beginning, they were not real receptive to us. I mean, they covered everything, I will say that, covered our events and wrote about us. The radio, the more conservative talk radio, was really kind, gave us a lot of airtime and that kind of thing, and still are. And the local news stations really came around because they got to know us. I think it's easier with your local media than it is with national media because they know you. They see you, you know, I'm friends with them, some of them on Facebook now, and, you know, they may not always agree with us, and they're pretty fair and balanced about it. I mean, they have to have other side about some of the issues that we've brought up, but they've been good with their coverage. Now, our local newspaper has really not ever been kind. I mean, they've let us put in a couple op-eds and things like that, but they have been pretty rough and you know, the whole racist kind of thing. And
really?
They allowed a woman to write a long editorial about how we were no different than the KKK. We just didn't have sheets.
Well, you know, just to jump in for a second, when I've heard those charges, I like to remind people that it was liberal Mike Wallace back in 1984 who said that the home improvement loan contracts being used by a bank were very difficult to read if you were looking at them over the taco or over the watermelon. It was Dan Rather about a year ago who said that Barack Obama couldn't sell watermelons on the side of the road if he had the state troopers to flag down the traffic for him. It was Joe Biden who said you can't go into a Dunkin' Donuts or a 7-Eleven in Delaware unless you have an Indian accent. And it was also Joe Biden who said that, you know, essentially Barack Obama was the first clean, good-looking, articulate black man in America. And then Harry Reid went as far as to say that Barack Obama didn't have a black accent unless he wanted one. So, I like to throw it back in their face and ask these people, well, where are you whenever well-known, nationally prominent liberals are making real racist remarks? Are you still there?
I'm still here. I dropped off and called right back in.
Oh, okay. It scared me. I looked
Sorry,
up
I'm on my cell phone
there.
Driving home, and I forgot about the – there's one spot out here, and I forgot about it.
Well, getting back to the activism, what kind of events does the Waco Tea Party have coming up?
Well, we have on Monday night, we're a co-sponsor with the Tea Party Express and CNN presidential debate. So there's a group of us from Waco going down to Tampa to partake in that. And there's going to be a watch party. At the same time, there's a watch party here in Waco for our supporters and volunteers and members to go out and watch the debate so they can be informed, involved, and active before they vote. And then in this fall, we're going to have a couple of different fundraisers. And one of them that we're thinking of doing a murder mystery.
Once again, back to the creativity.
Yes, and we have some of the most creative people. So we're going to do a murder mystery for a fundraiser. And then in January or February, I don't remember what the date is, we're having another primary palooza where we'll invite everybody who's going to be in the primary that's running for office is invited to come in and do a big, meet and greet, kind of like a job fair for candidates. Mm-hmm. And we are also going to have in the spring after the primary, we're going to hold we've got a couple different ideas, but we're going to think of doing a casino night, a Monte Carlo night, or maybe an awards night. And so we do all kinds of stuff together. Somebody tonight was like, can we do karaoke night? And we really have turned into a family here. And we recently lost one of our founding volunteers. His name was Don Summers. And Don and June had been at every event we'd ever done, volunteered for everything, and are the hardest, workers. And we lost Dawn recently, and June came back to our first meeting tonight, and it's a little rough, because we really have turned into a family. And, we don't always get along. Sometimes we, have disagreements, but that's okay. We don't have to always agree.
I have to ask about events in the last 72 or so hours. We had Jimmy Hoffa Jr. come out and say that the Tea Party needed to be taken out, and he said basically the Teamsters were Obama's army, and we need to take the Tea Party out. And then if all that weren't bad enough, we had the release of this Kill the Tea Party Zombies video game, where the object is to kill people like Sarah Palin, Newt Gingrich, Sean Hannity, and a number of and people that don't believe the birth certificate is real, and people who don't believe climate change is real. Just basically anybody that might be considered a Tea Partier. What are your thoughts as a Tea Party leader about this?
I was more upset over the zombie video, the Tea Party zombie death video, than I was over Jimmy Hoffa. I mean, would you expect anything different out of Jimmy Hoffa, the Teamsters and the unions? I don't know if you saw the news today about the longshoremen that went into Washington State to a railroad yard and destroyed grain and held up security, and this does not their thoughts. So, with the freedom of speech, you have to listen to all kinds of speech, and I just ignore them and go on. And we're better than that, and we don't need to sink to their levels. But the zombie one really bothered me because the majority of people who are gamers are young people. Mm-hmm. Younger millennials, and they're the, children. I mean, I have a friend who is a 4-year-old that is mastering video games.
Huh.
So, you've got small children, young adults, all the way to, some people, I like to play video games every now and then, but you don't have as much time for them. And it frightened me because it seemed to me that it was more conditioning them. If they may have never heard anything about the Tea Party, that's negative. And conditioning them that we are racist, kooks, redneck, which in Texas that's a term of endearment. So Klan members and the Koch brothers and Glenn Beck and all of them, making them look evil. And Michelle Bachmann was scantily clad, and I just thought that. For one thing, the reason we put out the parental alert is because we have so many parents and grandparents in the Tea Party. and a lot of homeschoolers that we wanted to make sure parents were aware this was a video game that kids could go online and play. They didn't have to sign up for anything. There was no age restriction on it. And it's violent. And so we wanted to make sure people knew it was out there, and if they had parental block controls on their internet service, that they maybe would consider blocking that service. And talk to your kids about, you know, that this is a game and it's not nice, and explain what your views are. Even if you do not agree with the Tea Party and that, you know, you don't like our stance of limited government, free markets, and fiscal responsibility, is it right to, you know, have a first-person shooter game with them? And that's beyond civility. That goes into decency. That why are we advocating killing people who we disagree with politically in this country? That's not what this country is about. Yes, it's okay to debate. It's okay to argue. It's okay to have the disagreements. But it's not okay to advocate any kind of violence. And that's the part that really bothered me, because, you know, most of these kids won't ever have that conversation with parents.
Something that really bothered me, Toby, was the fact that this was apparently paid for, ordered by an art council somewhere, and that art council received our tax dollars. So this is the kind of thing our tax dollars are actually going to support. It's ridiculous.
And that was the other part that really upset me, because, you know, if we reverse this role, and the Tea Party had come out with a video and paid for a video or used taxpayer funds for a video that advocated killing union members, Democrats, you know, anyone, elected officials, or, you know, MSNBC reporters, you know, if we had put Chris Matthews, Rachel Maddow, and you know, others in this kind of a video, would they have condoned it? Would they have ignored it?
I don't think so.
It would have been all over the media. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they would try to have it removed. I mean, the hypocrisy of it.
Yeah, the double standard is amazing. It really is. I can't imagine if we live in a country where a set of crosshairs on a political map put out by Sarah Palin caused people on the left to blame Sarah Palin for the shootings in Tucson, Arizona. I could only imagine what the response would be if the Tea Party were to do something like this. But, you know, the Tea Party is a class act. I mean, we're not going to respond by putting out a video game that encourages people to kill members of the left. You know, I know C.L. Bryant, who went with Glenn Beck to the 9/12 rally and also went with him to Israel, and he was saying that the 9/12 rally, the Park Service in Washington, will tell you that the Tea Partiers left the Washington Mall cleaner than they found it, whereas whenever Al Sharpton does a rally or John Stewart does a rally, you end up with a trash all over the ground because the Tea Party, the leftists believe the government owes them something, and that the, you know, the government will be by to clean up after them shortly. So,
well, and I was at that event, and it
the 9/12 rally.
Yes, and when we got there that morning, we ended up having to start everything early, but when we got there, it was like 8 in the morning, it was already filled. And people were using trash cans, and that's the only thing I will say is D.C. wasn't prepared for that. There was never enough trash cans. But it was very clean. I mean, you couldn't find any trash on the lawn, and around all of the trash receptacles, it was, even the trash that was left there was, like, stacked up neatly, and, you know, it was clean. And I was talking to one of the security people, a police officer, and asked him, I said, boy, there's a lot of you guys here today. I mean, I was really surprised. And he was blunt and told me, he said, well, they told us to expect riots and violence and fights. And I said, with us? And he laughed, and he said, I'm glad they were so wrong, but I think no one was arrested. I think there were a couple people taken away in the ambulance because of, you know, health reasons. But no one was hurt. There was no violence. There was, you know, it was peaceful. And we're almost like the peace movement of the 1960s on the right.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Cleaner.
You know, I'm sorry, but I don't hold back. I mean, I saw a study that said that a liberal website is 6 times more likely to have profanity on it than a conservative website. The left doesn't pick up after themselves. They leave trash all over the place. When you're debating a liberal, they have a trump card known as the F word, so you can have them backed into a corner from an argument standpoint, but they think if they use the F word, they automatically win the argument. There's a whole reel that I've put together where I'm bleeping out the F word from just numerous people on the left. I can't believe how these people talk. So I think they talk trashy. I think when they show up in public, they are trashy. And the video game is just another example of the way they think. If you don't agree with somebody, you kill them. So I don't know how in the world America can look at the American left and then look at the Tea Party on the right and think that we're the violent ones, that we're the mean ones, that we're the racist. It's just amazing to me that we have been so vilified in the press whenever it would be so easy to vilify the left if one chose to do so.
Well, and I think we tend to call our own herd. If a group on the right or, you know, organization has someone who's over the top, out of line, misbehaving, we tend to call them out and get rid of them. They're not welcomed back in. And it's funny to me that as I've seen this in 2.5 years, I don't know what they were, but I've seen this a couple places, you know, here in Texas, here locally and around the country, where they became like really big troublemakers, et cetera, et cetera. And then you see them gravitating over to the left and into the coffee party and into these other groups. And you're going, well, I don't think you were ever on our side to begin with.
No. I mean, a lot of them have been very open about their attempts to crash the Tea Parties and make us look bad. So I know that a Tea Party that I attended in Bryan College Station, put on by the Bryan College Station Tea Party and Nancy Kopic, they were so concerned about people on the left coming in with racist signs trying to make us look bad, they checked every single sign before it came in the gate, and they would not allow in any sign-making materials because they were afraid some people on the left would bring in some materials and then make the racist signs once they got in. They weren't worried about our people. They were worried about, you know, our efforts being sabotaged by people on the left who wanted to paint us all as racist. So we're all having to be very, very careful right now because I think the people on the left know the stereotype isn't true. I mean, you don't brand 20 to 25% of the American people as racist because of a handful of racist signs any more than it would be correct for me to accuse everyone on the left of being racist because of what Mike Wallace and Dan Rather and Harry Reid and Joe Biden said. So
I agree with you. There are kooks on the left, and there are kooks on the right, and there are kooks in the middle, and there are kooks at the top, and kooks at the bottom. There are some people who are just kooks.
Toby, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Are you there?
I lost you for a second. Just repeat whatever you just said.
Oh, well, there's kooky people on the left and the right, the top, the bottom, the middle. You know, there are crazy people out there. And
sure. They,
you know, we should not, and that was something that bothered me. You know, there has been 4 or 5 incidents over the last couple years where they immediately thought, oh, this is a Tea Party person, and they found out it wasn't. And I don't even like saying that they're part of the left. These were people who were not right, not normal. There was something wrong with them. They were mentally ill or had issues. And I don't like to tag that in with any of the group. You're right. I mean, I wouldn't consider just because somebody has mea culpa on a website with a manifesto, I wouldn't say that all Democrats are like him. So, you know, and I think if that were to happen on the Tea Party side, we wouldn't want them to think all Tea Party people are like that. And our country has become so divided, so divisive, and so it's like a tinderbox waiting for a match.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be the ones that are saying we're not going to allow this to happen, and we're not going to back down, but we're also not going to sink to their levels.
Well, you mentioned events that they originally tried to blame on the Tea Party. I mean, two of those were the Tucson shootings and the Times Square bombing that actually didn't take place. I mentioned this to one of the other Tea Party leaders that was on. The MSNBC broadcaster Contessa Brewer was doing an interview on another station, or maybe it was a radio station, and she said, you know, I'm so bummed out that it didn't turn out to be a Tea Partier. Just absolutely amazing to me that someone who's supposed to be a national broadcast news person, not a pundit, you know, not Glenn Beck or Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity or one of those, but somebody who's supposed to be, you know, the equivalent of what Shepard Smith is over at Fox, actually saying, gee, I was bummed out that that wasn't a Tea Party. You're like, wow, I wish we could have blamed that on the Tea Party. That's sick. And I just don't know why people have got this image in their head that people who want fiscal responsibility, smaller government, and as you said, personal responsibility, are bad people. How do you take that and turn it into racism?
You can't. And the problem with them doing that is it desensitizes people to actual occurrences. It's like, you know, crying wolf. And it bothers me that they are using the race card when it is not applicable, because when racism does occur, I don't think that it will be taken as seriously. They're hurting themselves when they say this, and I think it's very sad.
How big a part of the 2012 election – let me reword this. Back in 2008, anyone who disagreed with Barack Obama or said they weren't going to vote for him was considered to be a racist. And the race card got played a lot back in 2008. Do you think we're in for a repeat performance in 2012 where anybody who challenges any of Obama's policies is going to be branded a racist again?
It's never stopped, so I think it'll just continue. I mean, they've been saying this since 2008, and it's continued on through, and it's got to the point of, you know, the Tea Party really is colorblind. Money is colorblind in a sense of, you know, the fiscal responsibility aspect is colorblind. People of all nationalities, all ethnicities, of all socioeconomic backgrounds have issues with being fiscally responsible and personally responsible. So it isn't something that is, you know, in one race or one gender or one age group. I mean, it's across the board. So they're not going to quit this. They're going to continue to do it because it's the only thing they can. I think it will actually get worse. I think that and we've seen it ramping up and getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it seems they're like little kids that ramp up fit throwing, because they didn't get what they wanted the first time, and they didn't get,
right.
And it's not working, and it's going to get worse. And we're about to have, oh, I used to call them screaming memes or dying cockroaches. You know, they're on their backs screaming. And so I think we're going to see a lot of that. And
okay.
And when you have a child who does that, the worst thing you can do is pay attention to them when they're doing it. You have to walk off. So if you're going to act like that, I'm not paying attention to you. And you have to walk off, ignore it. That behavior will not get you a response.
If you're familiar
and
with
that's what,
sorry. Go ahead.
That's what we did here, I guess it was about a year ago. The media was in the group down in Killeen, was, I can't remember which group it was accusing us of being racist. And I said, here's the deal. We've been talking about this for a year and a half. We're not racist. I put out a statement about it and with a video. And this is the last statement we will ever make to the media about this issue. And we put a moratorium on talking about it for about 6 months. If somebody in the media would ask me, I'd say I would refer them back to the blog post and say, we don't discuss this issue anymore. I guess you didn't get the memo.
I love it.
And we moved on because they're using this, you know, that's why we really didn't address the Jimmy Hoffa thing. When they do that and the Tea Parties get defensive and they want to protect themselves and respond, the left wins every single time, because they took you off your message, they took you off your goal, and they took you off your talking points. So don't respond to it, ignore it. And when somebody asks you about that, to say, I guess you didn't get that memo, we're not racist, but I would like to tell you about the irresponsible spending that's going on in D.C. with XYZ. And just don't answer it. I mean, if somebody asks you, you know, a question you can an indefensible question. How often do you beat your wife? It's indefensible. So why respond to it? Just say I'm not falling for that. And the, you know, I like or love Christy O'Donnell. When she walked off Piers Morgan, that was the best thing she could have done. You know, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. I'm done.
Yeah, she's been on the show, and I visited with her about an hour in person last week. And what a lot of people don't realize about that, there are two very important things, and we didn't discuss it when Christine was on the show, so I'll just go ahead and bring this out now. One, she was on her way to another event and told them she had a max of 20 minutes to spend on that show, and they were way past the 20 minutes that she had promised them. The second thing is, and I'm not going to say what they asked her on the air, but she was asked a very, very, very personal question by Piers Morgan that is the type of question that a gentleman should not ask a lady anywhere, anytime, let alone on a national television interview. And I think that was the final straw. And I can tell you that whenever they actually released that video, they edited that question out. Okay, so that's something that not a lot of people know who have criticized Christine O'Donnell for walking out. Now, the other thing was she did tell them, you know, and this didn't make it on the air either, I hate to have to leave, but we're late for another event. We're past the amount of time we promised that we would give, and I'm willing to come back after the event and finish this interview. And they were kind of like, no, 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 we think we've got what we need. Of course they did. As she said when she gave the speech at the Woodlands Barnes & Noble, they knew they had television gold. They were going to turn that into Christine O'Donnell gets upset and stomps away, and that's what they did. But I think, you know, in true CNN, MSNBC fashion, they doctored what they released. They didn't show the highly personal question that did upset her, and they didn't acknowledge that she promised them 20 minutes and that they were way, way past that, nor did they acknowledge that she was not kind enough to offer to come back after her event and finish the interview if they were willing to let her do that. So there was a lot of stuff there that CNN didn't discuss, and I don't think it should surprise anyone, because we're dealing with a conservative in Christine O'Donnell, that they chose to be unprofessional like this. So anyway, I've said my Christine O'Donnell piece, but that's the whole story.
Well, and you know, even if she did take offense and walk off, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, that makes me uncomfortable, I choose not to answer that, thank you for having me, good night.
I think Christine O'Donnell put it best last Thursday night in the Woodlands whenever she said, let's face it, Piers Morgan is desperate for ratings, and that interview probably bought him a few more weeks. So,
exactly.
I would agree with that.
And that's one of the things that I think we have to just, if you're talking about me, you're giving somebody else a break. And so, give each other a break. You know, talk about each other. But
yeah.
I just don't think that when some of these accusations are made, I think that the Tea Party, we tend to, and we've been guilty of this too, is that we've tended to say, oh, you know, this is wrong, we shouldn't have done that, they shouldn't have said this about us, and we're not doing that, and blah, blah, blah. Well, you just gave them more airtime. If they cannot find a Tea Party person to respond, they'll quit. Or they won't, and they'll say, oh, well, the Tea Party's running from it. Yeah, well, whatever. You know that whole, you know, what do you care what they think of you? They don't like us. They will never like us. They will never agree with us. Give up. You know, but you're banging your head against a wall. So there are just some topics. I mean, I just won't handle in the media. Just like, you know, that's not us. And anybody who knows me knows better than that. I've been on NPR. I've been on BBC. I've been on some pretty left-leaning, in some left-leaning interviews, and they always treat me extremely nice, extremely well, because I don't make it personal and I don't bring in social issues. I talk about what we want to talk about, which is socially responsible or fiscally responsible, constitutionally limited government, free markets. And if you stick to that and you don't make a judgment on the people but on the policy, you tend to do a little better. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I've made my clubs in the media, but I just won't address it, and I tell them that. I will not address it. I tell them right off, if you go off on this, I'm getting up and walking out, and I don't care what you say about me. You won't make my husband hate me. You're not going to take my birthday away.
Well, It seems to me that that's very good advice for any of the other Tea Partiers listening around the country. We've just had an all-star lineup of Tea Party leaders here today. We've had the Spartanburg Tea Party, the St. Louis Tea Party, and, of course, now the Waco Tea Party. And all three of you are just some of the most incredible active groups in the country. So I'll just say keep up the great work. And I'll extend the same invitation to you that I have to the Spartanburg Tea Party and the St. Louis Tea Party. We will be starting in October a new feature on the show. It's going to be called the Tea Party Book Club, where we're going to give a local tea party from, you know, different places around the country the opportunity to meet a conservative author and really get to know them by asking them questions about their latest book. So we'd love to have Waco participate in that as well.
Oh, I think it would be a blast. We definitely would love to do that.
Well, speaking of going over on time, we have, but fortunately this is the internet radio, so we can do that. And I want to thank you for being here today. And before you go, please tell anyone listening how they can get a hold of you if they want you to, you know, give a speech or talk to them about various things that you found that work with your Tea Party, and also how they can find your website and your upcoming events.
I'm really easy to get a hold of. You go to wacoteaparty.org. And click on our Contact Us page, and there is a contact form, a phone number, and an email.
Toby, thanks for being with us today. I look forward to having you back on the show really, really soon.
Well, thank you for having me.
My next guest is Bill Hennessy. He is the co-founder of the St. Louis, Missouri Tea Party. He's here to tell us about all the good things going on right now in St. Louis. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's great to be here. Appreciate the opportunity to come on.
You know, I've been a fan for a while. I subscribe to the St. Louis Tea Party newsletter and have been checking out your website, and it looks like you guys are pretty active there in St. Louis.
We are. We've after the elections last year, there was a bit of a lull. We always keep some things going, but we wanted people to have a chance to kind of relax for a while, because it was really a two-year just sprint from February 27, 2009 through the election last year. And folks needed a breather, but we're cranking back up, and we used that time to do some planning and strategizing and look at what we really needed to do to move our organization and to help move the country forward.
Talk to me about some of your upcoming activities. What kind of things does the St. Louis Tea Party have planned?
Well, what we're calling it is the after party, and I'll tell you where we came up with that. We looked around and we realized that the way I put it is that the rally phase of the Tea Party movement is kind of behind us. And it doesn't mean that we're not going to have rallies, but you know, we had September 12th, 2010, we had over 14,000 people down on the at the riverfront in St. Louis.
Wow.
And you're always held to the standard of your last event, right? Or of your highest of watermark. That's going to be hard to beat. That was right before an election. It was an exciting time. We had the Tea Party Patriots, who did a fantastic job of pulling that thing together and getting the publicity and the talent and everything else. And it's virtually impossible to keep beating your last mark. And that's not to say that the movement's winning. It's just that you can only do those things every now and then. And rather than trying to put all that energy into an event where we're confident we can pull good numbers, it's just we're not going to be able to hit that kind of event with national entertainment and everything. So the other thing is that we believe that the rallies are great recruiting tools, but they don't necessarily pull in the people who fundamentally agree with limited government, constitutionally limited government, fiscal responsibility, state sovereignty, and all the other issues that we believe in. But they're not—they don't feel comfortable necessarily with the coming out to a rally. They're not the kind of people who carry signs or bullhorns, and they're a little standoffish. And we in St. Louis, we learned a lot about this sort of demographic when we had something called a boycott of Whole Foods a couple of years ago, when John Mackey, the CEO, got in a lot of trouble for opposing Obamacare, The way we tried to support them was have a boycott, which was we got people who probably weren't Whole Foods shoppers, and we descended on a store in one night en masse, and we asked people to come in, shop, and let us scan your receipt on the way out, and we want to be able to tell the world how much how many people we can bring into your stores to support John Mackey. Well, what happened was we had over 1,000 people show up. They came from as far away as the suburbs of Chicago, all the way down to St. Louis, just to shop that one night. Almost all of them were visiting a Whole Foods for the first time in their life. Almost all of them sympathized with the Tea Party movement, but had never been to an event because, as I said, they didn't feel comfortable in going out to a park waving a sign. They didn't think that they were, in some of their words, quote, radical enough for that. But they felt very comfortable going shopping in a grocery store. And for their part, mm-hmm. Whole Foods rolled out the red carpet like you couldn't believe. They had, they decided to staff the store with managers that night.
Mm-hmm.
Because they knew there'd be a lot of first timers, and they wanted to tell people what they were shopping for and why they select the food they have. It was fantastic. We 1,000 people showed up, spent over $50,000 in one night. It was the biggest night in the store's existence.
That's fantastic. I held a personal boycott with Joseph A. Banks. If you'll remember, at one point, Men's Warehouse pulled off of the Glenn Beck show, and seeing an opportunity, Joseph A. Banks immediately hopped on. So I, the next time I needed suits, I personally went to Joseph A. Banks and bought 3 suits from him just because I appreciated that statement when everyone else was jumping off the Glenn Beck ship. That is a fantastic idea, just the opposite of a boycott. I think you guys did a great job.
Exactly, it's positive and it pulls people in. So we're taking that to the next step now. So for the next year, for the next 12 months, the third Thursday of every month, we are meeting and we have a variety of locations around the St. Louis area so that people don't have to people in the outlying areas don't always have to travel in. People who live in the city don't have to always travel out. We'll kind of rotate it around the region. But it's called the After Party, the third Thursday of every month. We have a short meeting. It usually lasts for about an hour. In that meeting, what we do is we talk about a mission for the next month, and it's usually something simple. The first one is, hey, we want you to just identify 5 people who you want to get closer to over the next year, who you think should be more involved, not in politics, but in civics, just more involved in their community. And what we're going to do is we're going to spend the next 12 months helping you nurture your relationship with those 5 people so that you are more self-sufficient, so that you're the basis of a tighter personal community or network, and so that you have the basics that you need to get along without any dependency on government whatsoever. So that's what the mission is, and we're going to have a different mission each month. We're going to begin by reporting our accomplishment the previous month, getting a stamp or a badge or some sort of something to keep score of how far we've gotten into the program, and then announce the next week's mission or the next month's mission, and then we're going to have basically a party afterwards. So we're really going to emphasize the social aspect of the thing, because as government has grown and taken away responsibility from the people, and along with our privileges, it's also taken away responsibility. I think that we're probably a little weak in the area of taking care of ourselves as a society. Maybe not any one individual, but as a community, we are. We have to start rebuilding that. You know, we want less government. It's also our responsibility to replace that government with the skills we need to move forward. And so that's essentially what the program is. And it'll complete just in time that we can now focus our energy next fall on the election in 2012.
You know, I really like the way you guys do business, and not to keep going back to it, but I'm so impressed with the way you turned the typical boycott into something positive with a boycott. One of the things I've been thinking for a long time, Bill, is that conservatives have a lot of consumer muscle to flex, and we typically don't do it, but that flexing can go both ways. And I still cannot get over what a brilliant idea that was. In fact, at one time I tried starting something called the Conservative Consumer Coalition, and we never really got it off the ground. But maybe if we'd been more positive and done boycotts instead of boycotts, we could have. And I absolutely love that. Now, you're a very good writer. Tell the people out there how they can get a hold of your blog.
Okay. The St. Louis Tea Party's website is simply stlouisteaparty.com. That's stlouisteaparty.com. And that pulls together basically all of the bloggers who belong to the St. Louis Tea Party or who are major contributors at the kind of administration level in the St. Louis area, and some just fantastic stuff. Sign up for the daily newsletter. That way you don't have to navigate to the site every day. It'll take you directly into the originating blog. And one of those blogs is mine, which is Hennessy's View, Hennessy's View.com. And I've been blogging, it's kind of sad, but I've been blogging since about 1999. I think the current website has archives back to 2000. And I've written three books. The latest one is Weaving the Roots, and it's on getting the most out of social media for organizations like the Tea Party. It was published by HarperCollins. It's available on Amazon.com. And before that was Zen Conservatism, about simplifying and being positive about making the changes that we need to make. And after all, the United States is the ultimate Zen government. You know, it's minimalism. It's only what you need, and that's exactly what the founders were trying to do. The minimum necessary to keep an orderly society. And before that, back in 1993, I wrote a book called The Conservative Manifesto, which was a back in the day. It was a featured selection in the Conservative Book Club a couple of times. So.
Fantastic! I tell you what, we're gonna put Amazon links up to all three of those on our website, the Tea Party Power Hour. And
I tell you what,
the next time we have you on, we'll start with the most recent book and work backwards.
That's wonderful. I appreciate that.
Oh, we'd love to have you back on to talk about those. Let's switch to current events very quickly. You know, I hadn't planned to ask my Tea Party leaders about this, but I feel like I just have to. Coming on the heels of the Jimmy Hoffa Jr. remark, you know, regarding taking the SOBs out, meaning the Tea Party, we have this release of a video game where the purpose is to go around and kill Tea Party zombies, and there are people like Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich and Sean Hannity. It's amazing to me that we had the president calling for a more civil discourse back in Tucson whenever Gabriella Giffords was shot, and now we have the head of the Teamster Union saying he's going to take us out in a video game that essentially trains people to want to kill us, and the president is remaining silent. What are your thoughts on this, Bill?
It doesn't surprise me at all. None of what you just said surprises me. That the president would be duplicitous over threats to human lives doesn't surprise me at all. That Teamsters boss and Jimmy Hoffa, actually, if there's any surprise, it's kind of that. You would think that the Hoffa family of all families in America would understand the dangers of trying to achieve political ends through violence. But the fact that, you know, Dana Lash and I here in St. Louis have had threats against us for, you know, and it's always at a time where there's a confrontation of some sort with the union. We've been dealing with that since this thing started. So it's the way the unions operate. When I was 6 years old, my dad took me to get a haircut at a non-union barber shop on the hill in St. Louis. About an hour after we left, the pipe bomb went through the window. So growing up in St. Louis, you're used to the way unions operate. And I know that sounds like a broad brush, but gee, I've been awfully close to it since I was a little kid. And that's what I've seen. So that doesn't surprise me at all. What I'm very proud of is the way we have responded to this. St. Louis Tea Party put out a press release within an hour of Jimmy Hoffa's comment, saying basically, you know, we regret it that he would go there. And what we're doing to counteract it is the Thursday night parties, basically. So we're going to go out and form a tighter community. That's our response. We're also getting ready to unveil some pretty cool T-shirts to commemorate the SOBs of the Tea Party, which looks a little bit like a Jolly Rogers flag. So it's with the St. Louis Tea Party logo in the shape of the skull on the crossbones. So basically, what it's going to do is, and you know, our web hits went up the same day, and they've been pretty good. So in the end, Mr. Hoffa really just marketed the Tea Party a lot better. Gave us a chance to show and contrast the way our approach to politics against theirs.
I think if anything, if we can make a football analogy, he gave us some great bulletin board material that has everyone fired up.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And you can always count on them. Jimmy Hoffa or SEIU or Ben Jealous of the NAACP, we can count on them to pick us up when things are otherwise quiet.
that is so true. They haven't learned that lesson yet. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I've got three Tea Party leaders on today, and you are actually the third, and I know you didn't get the chance to hear the previous two. But based on what everyone is saying, there is a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. We are evolving as a party, and it seems to me that all these people who continue to announce our demise prematurely don't seem to understand that as the Tea Party matures, as the Tea Party evolves, that there's going to be a whole lot more stuff going on behind the scenes and probably less waving of signs, except during, you know, political periods and maybe specific times of year, like April 15th, for example. Would you agree that the Tea Party is now starting to gel a little bit more, and it's becoming less about the demonstrative outward signs and more about getting things done behind the scenes?
Well, speaking for St. Louis, I can say yes, absolutely. And you know, what's funny about that is, but by the way, if I get in trouble, it's because I speak with the truth as I see it, whether or not it's popular. And I know that it actually disappoints a lot of people that we're not doing lots of big rallies all the time, and lots of demonstrations, and a lot of chances to kind of show anger, and that's. I think that's the leader's burden to kind of take those blows from the folks who want to do that, and I understand why. You know, I'm still angry too. But at some point, and I started making this point very early, and between the first Tea Party in February and the first Tax Day Tea Party, I started telling people then, look, it's okay to be angry right now, but we need to have a chart. It's basically a rectangle with a line diagonally through it. And on one side of the line is anger, and on the other side of the line is solutions. And we start off where it's almost all anger, but by the time we get to 2010's election, we have to be almost all solutions. And that's going to be difficult because once everybody can say, I'm against murder, and you get 100% agreement. When you try to stop it is when you start making enemies. We're at the point where we have to do that. We have to move forward, and I think we are. And that doesn't lend itself to big rallies so often. It does lend itself to that community building that we're trying to do here. So I believe that that's what's happening. I hope that's what's happening. And we're working really hard to put together a program that's going to make that gelling happen. I think we're going to surprise pollsters in 2012. I don't know that they're going to be able to respond with the changes in the Tea Party because of that. Because I think that we're going to draw in people who were not members before, but we're not going to have any big public face that's going to allow them to count us so too easily.
Well said, Bill. Now, before we let you go, tell us one more time how the people can get a hold of the St. Louis Tea Party, your web address. If you've got a phone number you'd like to give out, you're welcome to do that as well. And then talk to us about some of these T-shirts and where they can find the St. Louis Tea Party online store.
Okay, it's stlouisteaparty.com. That's stlouisteaparty.com. The store is not up right now. We had it up last year, but we were giving the the order fillers a little rest, and I've been enjoying my rest. So, but I think we're gonna turn that back on and get some volunteers to do the fulfillment work for us with the new Jolly Roger shirt. So that should be up in a couple of weeks, just after we want to launch it at our first after party event, which is September 15th here in St. Louis. But after that, we hope to have it up on the website, stlouisteaparty.com. So if they sign up and get the newsletter mailed to them every day, they'll know when it's available, and it'll probably be pretty popular. I know just from showing the graphics around, people immediately said, "I've got to have that T-shirt." By the way, I do want to give one plug for the boycott. That idea came from Dr. Gina Loudon. I want to make sure she gets credit for that, because that was brilliant. She designed the whole event. So,
well, hats off to her. That was a great idea, and there's nothing like taking a traditional form of activism and making it more positive. And I know so many Tea Partiers that feel that way. They just don't want to get involved in anything that's negative. And I recall once having a conversation with a young lady about an actress that was pro-abortion, even supported late term abortion. I'll just say it was Ashley Judd. And I said, so if Ashley Judd's latest movie comes to town, should we all get together and get signs and protest outside the theater? And she was, oh my goodness, no. No, that's not dignified. That's what liberals do. And so many people I know in the Tea Party movement, I mean, this opportunity to go outside and wave a sign was one of the first opportunities they've taken, because they just didn't ever see that as something that conservatives would do, except for perhaps, you know, right to life, anti-abortion type movements. So I think this boycott is exactly what we've been looking for, is a way for people to be positive about something. And when you were telling that story, Bill, it reminded me of the case in Wisconsin where the union was going around and telling the, you know, kind of doing a shakedown movement with the small shop owners, you will put a sign in your store supporting the union. And someone said, well, what if I just say I'm neutral? No, that's not good enough. You've got to say you're positive. And one woman put a sign in her window basically saying she wasn't going to be pushed around, and did more business than that store had ever done in its existence, because people came to support it. So I think it's a great form of expression, and I'm so glad that you shared that with us today. Well, Bill, that's all the time we have, but now that I know you're the author of 3 books, I want to have you back so we can explore that. Can I count on you to come back sometime?
I would love to.
Fantastic. Bill, thanks for being with us today. Best of luck to the St. Louis Tea Party.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's all the time we have today for the Tea Party Power Hour. I want to remind everyone to join us next week when my guest will be Pamela Geller. You'll remember Pamela as being the publisher and founder of the Atlas Shrugs website. She is also the author of the most recently released Stop the Islamization of America, A Practical Guide to the Resistance. Also, I want to remind everyone that my interviews with Newt Gingrich, Christine O'Donnell, Juan Williams, and Mark Stein are still posted at teapartypowerhour.com. Just click on the picture of the guest, and it will automatically take you to the archive. One last reminder, we have a lot of different products for sale on the teapartypowerhour.com website. Clicking on those ads and making a purchase is one of the things that helps this show stay on the air. So we hope that should you find a product that would be of use to you, that you'll consider purchasing it through our website. Once again, thank you for being here today. We look forward to having you back next week.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Galar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.